Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Here on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to two on the weekdays. And hey man, check it out. Email buddy Daniel sent me this in the email this morning. It's Representative Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. Sorry, I'm sure I'm saying her name wrong, but anyway. And I'll go ahead and sort of kind of spoil it for you. She's an Iraq war vet, so she knows a little bit about it, and she has that political body armor, if you will, to say the kinds of things she says. And the comic relief in here, of course, is Wolf Blitzer doing the question asking, but I think you'll enjoy this.
Let's talk about this deal, this agreement that was worked out today between the United States and Russia to avoid some accidental head-on collision between fighter jets over Syria. The secrecy of this deal, they're not making it public. Does that concern you?
It doesn't. You know, I think that the Pentagon knows and understands how important it is to make sure that our troops are not put into harm's way and that we're not put into a situation where you have this accidental military conflict with Russia in the air. So I think making this deal with Russia to deconflict that is an important thing. But there's a bigger issue here that I'm concerned with, and that is the fact that the U.S. and the CIA are working to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad, while Russia, a longtime ally of Assad for decades now, is working to defend or uphold this Syrian government of Assad. And this puts us in a position of a possible direct head-to-head conflict with Russia as long as the U.S. and CIA continue down this path.
Well, how does the U.S. and Russia avoid that head-on contact? Because you're absolutely right. The U.S. wants to get rid of Bashar al-Assad. The Russians want to boost him and protect him together with the Iranians, their allies, the Lebanese Hezbollah group. They're trying to prop him up. So how do you avoid that potential collision?
Very simple. The U.S. and the CIA should stop this illegal and counterproductive war to overthrow the Syrian government of Assad and should stay focused on fighting against who our enemy is, the Islamic extremist groups. Because right now we're seeing why this is counterproductive. By working towards that end, by working towards overthrowing the Syrian government of Assad, we are not only strengthening our enemy, the Islamic extremists, who will walk in and take over all of the country of Syria. Right now they have about half of the country under their control, but it also puts us in that position of a potential direct head-to-head conflict with Russia, which brings us to the brink of a potential larger conflict of a World War III type situation.
Why do you say the U.S. effort to get rid of Bashar al-Assad's regime is counterproductive and illegal?
Well, first of all, there's not been a vote in Congress to authorize the use of force, to authorize a war to overthrow a sovereign government. For as long as I've been there, that hasn't happened. It didn't happen before I got there. So the American people haven't had a choice to speak their voice, to approve or disapprove such a war. Therefore, it's illegal. Secondly, it is counterproductive because right now, U.S. arms are getting into the hands of our enemy, al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, these other groups, Islamic extremist groups who are our sworn enemy. These are groups who attacked us on 9/11 and who supposedly were trying to defeat, yet at the same time, supporting them with these arms to overthrow this Syrian government.
So you don't even want the U.S. to provide weapons or arms to these anti-Bashar al-Assad rebels?
I don't want the U.S. government to provide weapons to al-Qaeda, to Islamic extremists, to our enemy. I think it's a very simple concept in my mind that you can't defeat your enemy if you're arming them and helping them at the same time. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Have you told this to officials at the White House?
We've had conversations, both in hearings and otherwise, and I think it's important for the American people to stand up and say, look, we don't want to go and do what happened in Iraq with Saddam Hussein, do what happened in Libya with Gaddafi, because these are countries that have fallen into chaos and that have been taken over by these terrorists because of the actions that the United States and others took.
You tweeted recently, any candidate who supports a safe no-fly zone in Syria must admit that U.S. coalition ground air troops are needed to enforce.
Yes.
That's a statement directed at Hillary Clinton, who now supports a no-fly zone. The president opposes a no-fly zone, at least for now.
It was a statement directed at all of our presidential candidates because as they are asked these questions and are taking positions on them, I think it's important for the American people to understand exactly what those positions mean. People are calling them different things, a no-fly zone or a safe zone, but for those who are pushing for this, they've got to be held accountable for the decision they're making that this will require U.S. air assets to enforce it. It will require U.S. air assets to take out anti-aircraft missile defense systems, for example, that the Syrian government has. And again, that puts us into a direct head-to-head conflict with a sovereign government, the government of Syria, and with Russia and their allies, and will also require a very large amount of ground troops on the ground to enforce this. There are a slew of other issues with this and why I think a no-fly zone would be a terrible mistake.
Yeah, and I know you're obviously very concerned about what happened in Libya, getting rid of Gaddafi. The current situation there is...
The same thing will happen all over again.
It's a disaster in Libya right now. All right, stand by. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, we're going to have much more right after this. We're following Russia's escalating air war in Syria with 60 airstrikes reported in the last 24 hours alone. Russia claims they're against ISIS and other terrorist targets, but the U.S. believes they're primarily targeting rebel forces fighting the government of the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. We're back with Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii. She's a member of the Armed Services and Foreign Affairs Committee and Iraq War combat veteran at the same time. Does it not concern you that Bashar al-Assad's regime has been brutal, killing at least 200,000, maybe 300,000 of its own people with these barrel bombs, and all these reports of hundreds of thousands of people who have been left homeless, billions, in fact, refugees. And the U.S. is obviously, so many other international powers are so upset about that and want to get rid of him as a result of what he's been doing to his own people over the past 4 years.
Yeah, well, if it concerns me deeply to see this tremendous and tragic human suffering, I think it's important for leaders of the world, leaders here in the United States, to look at this issue, though, and say, okay, if you do in Syria what happened in Libya, what happened in Iraq, because the same things that are being said about Assad right now were said about Gaddafi. They were said about Saddam Hussein by those who were advocating for the U.S. to go in and intervene, to overthrow those regimes and those dictators. The fact is that if that happens here in Syria, as U.S. leaders and others are advocating for, we will end up with a situation far worse than we're seeing today. We'll end up in a situation with far greater human suffering, with far greater persecution of religious minorities and Christians in Syria, and our enemy will be far stronger. They will take over the entire country of Syria. They will have greater weapons and capabilities and present a greater threat not only to the people in the region, but to the world.
What you're saying is that the Russian military involvement on the air, on the ground, the Iranian involvement in Syria right now, the Hezbollah involvement, they're actually doing the U.S. a favor.
They are working towards defeating our common enemy. When you look at the groups that are on the ground there, the most effective fighting groups to fight, who are fighting to overthrow this government, the Syrian government of Assad, they are predominantly ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, and these other Islamic extremist groups. They make up the vast majority of these so-called Syrian rebels. They are the most effective force who has gained the most territory. So the people who they're attacking in the Russians are dropping bombs are these Al-Qaeda, people who are enemy, people who attacked us on 9/11.
So you're basically saying you don't want your fellow soldiers, and you're a member of the Hawaii National Guard. You just were promoted from captain to major. You served in Iraq. You don't want the men and women of the U.S. military on the ground in any of those areas. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, there's no reason for them to go and be deployed to these situations. I think it's important for us, first and foremost, to recognize, A, who our enemy is, and B, what our mission is. Our mission is to defeat our enemy, not to take action that's counterproductive to that mission and help our enemy get stronger. It's a very simple premise, and I think it's important for us to focus on that.
I was really concerned when you mentioned to me the other day you were surfing in Hawaii and you got hit by the surfboard. What happened?
Wow. Well, she's wrong that we should focus on fighting the enemy. When they fight against the enemy, they make them more powerful. When they fight for the enemy, they really make them more powerful. But fighting against them has done nothing but backfire this whole time anyway, as it's probably mostly meant to do. Anyway, her for president. Isn't it the case that everything in the world proves how lousy Rand Paul is on everything in the world? Ain't it a shame? That was cool, though. Tulsi Gabbard. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Phil Giraldi's coming up to talk about the Israel lobby and their corrupt power in America, as is his wont, and mine. Very important article by Phil this week. Coburn tomorrow. Andrew Coburn, that is. Oh, no, next week. That's not tomorrow. That's next week. I'll have to get back with him. Philip Weiss tomorrow. And we'll be talking about the Israel lobby in Israel. Boy, oh, boy. And I got a million invites out. What, do I stink or something? I took a shower. What do I got to do to get these people to want to still do my radio show? Was this something I said? Was it my demeanor? Anyway, so I sort of thought, geez, they're all going to answer at the same time. And then, no, still none of them answered. Anyway, I got a ton of news, so I'm glad I'll have the time to cover the news. First, I got to tell you, I'm on the Liberty Radio Network. That's LRN.FM, LibertyRadioNetwork.com. Live here noon to 2 Eastern time on the weekdays. So if you're hearing a recording of this later, that's how to hear the show live. Noon to 2 weekdays on the Liberty Radio Network. Yeah, and at my website, scotthorton.org, you can join up the chat room with the boys. Hey, guys. Good to see you. scotthorton.org/chat. You can sign up for the RSS feed of the whole show archives or the just the interviews on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever RSS catcher you got. And you can also donate and help support the show and find out how to advertise on the show. You have something you want to advertise on the show? Stop by scotthorton.org/donate, and it has my email address there. How to contact me if you want to strike a deal to sell some ads, help support the show, and make a little money yourself. And then for the rest of you who just love giving money away all the time to radio shows you love, then there's all different kinds of ways that you can help support the show. And a list of very fine kickbacks. Audiobooks, regular kinds of books, QR code commodity discs. You can do weekly or monthly. A little bit. You can donate per interview at patreon.com if you want to incentivize me to shut up more and interview instead of talking. If I could get these people to answer me back, I would, really. But donate per interview at patreon.com. Whatever. Stop by, Scott Hort. Oh, bitcoins. I love bitcoins. Send me bitcoins. Oh, you like bitcoins? You like sending bitcoins to people. I'm a person. I will happily receive your bitcoins. And you can find out all about that at scotthorton.org/donate. All right, cool. Last night I did Eye on the Empire with Jeff Tucker. Let's see, we talked about how much we like Sheldon Richman, especially Jeff did. I love Sheldon Richman, but boy, does Jeff Tucker love Sheldon Richman. Wow. And then also, we talked about politics, and we talked about the TPP, and we talked about, I don't know. It was pretty good. You might like it. Liberty.me. It's on YouTube. Just search Eye on the Empire, me and Jeff Tucker's name. You can find it there. You can look at a picture of me, a still shot of me from that, as you listen to the radio show, if you want to. Pretend that the radio show has a camera on it, but it's got a bug in it. All right. Yeah, so I crossed that off. Judge Knapp's got a great one coming out tomorrow, man. Well, I guess it's probably already online somewhere, so it'll be on antiwar.com tomorrow, but it's called The Midwife to Chaos and Her Perjury. Blam! How nice it must be to have a bunch of Fox News interns running around doing what you say, huh? So he found all the places where Hillary committed perjury. Somebody actually did ask her about the arms. Yeah, so let's see. Well, I'll get to right of the meat of the thing here. The FBI agents surely heard Clinton mislead Congress when she answered a hard question about arms going to rebels by saying, "I think the answer is no." And again, when she answered a question about arming private militias by saying it may have been considered, but it wasn't seriously considered. And they heard her directly commit perjury when she was asked whether she knew about our country supplying arms to Libyan rebels, directly or indirectly, and she answered no. How could she answer no? She not only knew about the sending of arms to rebels, but also personally authored and authorized it. How could she answer no? The FBI and CIA advised her, in documents that are now public, that U.S. arms were making their way to known Al-Qaeda operatives. How could she answer no? This reached a crisis point when some of those operatives used their American-made weapons to murder U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens at the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. Ta-da! All of us who were paying attention already knew this all along and tried to tell you, and there it is, and it's got, and they got the documents. And see, what I was, my crack about the interns is, I actually had the Washington Post transcript of the entire hearing, but of course it's prohibitively long and boring and stupid. I guess I could have at least taken some time to search some keywords. But anyway, thanks Judge Knapp for doing my job for me. There you go. Somebody did ask her about arming these militias. I don't know if they asked her about the Al-Qaeda connection, but they asked about the arms, and they asked about the militias, and she perjured herself. Imagine. She didn't want to admit that, yes, she knew that the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group were veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq who fought for Zarqawi against the United States of America in that war. That the same goes for Ansar al-Sharia. Because then, you know, I don't know. Nothing. Don't worry, Hillary. All the Republicans at Fox News and in the Republican Party, everybody except Judge Knapp is in on it with you. So go ahead. That's the article at antiwar.com today by Michael Brendan Doherty. Oh, yesterday. Sorry. Yesterday we ran. It was from The Week where he had a great, in fact, Patrick Coburn. Benghazi, Hillary is guilty, but not as charged, is along the same lines about how, well, you know, the right-wing hawks, they only told her what's taken so long. So they are in no position to argue her real criminality. So, there you go. Cool. All right, well, I'm kind of sorry that I didn't spend this segment talking about Iraq and Russia and Syria. But I'm going to get to that. We got some very important news going on as far as all that goes. I had an invite out to an expert to talk about the CISA thing. CISA? How do you say it? I don't know. But maybe later in the week. But I got a ton of Israel news, starting with Phil Giraldi's new piece, Israel Takes on the First Amendment. At UNS.com, he will be on the show right after this. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime future freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Our guest today is Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer. Now he is the executive director of the Council for the National Interest, and he writes for UNS.com and the American Conservative magazine. UNS is UNZ, UNS.com. And this one is called Israel Takes on the First Amendment. And I'm really glad, well, first of all, welcome back to the show. How you doing, Phil?
I'm fine, Scott. You?
Good, good. Appreciate you joining us again, as always. And I'm really glad that you wrote about this because I don't know if you know, but my show is kind of the best ofs. Are played on KUCR in Riverside in the Inland Empire in Southern California and up in Davis as well. And I've been, KUCR, university radio there. And I've been warned that actually that may be coming to an end because the University of California system is outlawing criticism of Israel. And so, I may very well be taken off the air there on KUCR and KDRT. And so really happy to see that you wrote this article about this. I mean, I guess I'm kind of surprised I'm on in the first place, right? But anyway, I thought it was already illegal to criticize Israel. Apparently only informally, but they're working on formalizing that in the UC system. Can you explain, please?
Well, I mean, basically what this comes down to is that there are all kinds of restrictions on free speech, as I'm sure you and I are both aware. But a lot of them are simple courtesies. What a lot of people who are supporting Israel and are very concerned, particularly about the boycott movement, is to stop people on campus from talking about Israel at all. And what they're doing is essentially saying that talking about Israel in a negative way is basically a threat to Jewish students, and if Jewish students, as a result of this talk, feel threatened, that kind of language or that kind of discussion will no longer be acceptable at the university. And there have been a number of examples I cite. There were, you know, in 2014 to 15, there were over 300 incidents. All over the United States, where Israeli groups, and when I say Israeli groups, I mean these are basically people like Sheldon Adelson and people like that who are funding these efforts. So these are national efforts with a lot of money behind them, and they're getting students to say, "Yes, I feel threatened." And once they start to say that they feel threatened, the university steps in and says, "No, you can't talk about that." So that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because, I mean, in a way, it's sort of like they believe their own BS. It sounds like that, hey, listen, the only reason that anybody would ever criticize Israel is because they're born hating Jews, because that's how all non-Jews are, I guess, or something like that. And never, ever grapple with the occupation of the Palestinians. No, 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 never heard of such a thing. They don't exist, or if they did, they still don't, and they caused the Holocaust and whatever. Anyway, they hate us because we're Jewish. That's the line. And so that makes sense then. If they really believe that then they're saying to the university, deans and whatever, the administrators, that, hey, all these people, whenever they criticize Israel, it's their secret code language for, you know, they want to put me in an oven or whatever. That's what they've been made to believe. The problem, though, of course, is that none of that is true. And all the people, I mean, come on, 99.999% of the people on college campuses protesting Israel, whether they're Palestinian or Jewish or other, are leftists or liberals, at least, of some kind or another, and are clearly not anti-Semites. They're civil rights types, only they're just applying their liberal civil rightsy principles to Palestinians, too, that's all. So you got kind of this ideological explanation for what is going on here up against a very hard reality. And like you said, the BDS movement, we're not just talking about criticism of Israel. We're talking about people organizing to boycott Israel. So this ought to be, it sounds like a pretty explosive battle going on here, or the setup for one.
Yeah, and of course, you know, when you got one side which has a lot of resources and everything like that, it makes their argument seem legitimate, even if it isn't. And that's the sad thing about this. And I think the point you made, I mean, quite a lot of these people on campuses that are demonstrating against Israeli policies are Jewish. And you can go through the list. There are a heck of a lot of them. And they're certainly not anti-Semites. And the movement in general itself has been very careful not to turn this into a Jewish issue. And in fact, all of the criticisms basically come down to a very simple equation. The equation is that if you criticize Israel, you are ipso facto an anti-Semite. Now, which is not to say there aren't some anti-Semites out there, but that's not really what we're talking about.
Right, of course. And I don't know, when has there ever been an organized anti-Semitic movement on an American campus? Right? I mean, do they have like the Nazi party or whatever, the KKK group on some campus in the South? Not that I've ever heard of. We're talking, of course, almost without exception, I think. Maybe I'm assuming a lot here, but aren't we talking about purely liberal and left-wing groups here?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there are no conservative groups out there screaming about, the First Amendment because, obviously, if you watch the Republican debate, you realize the First Amendment is irrelevant.
They're not much into it either.
Right, they're not. But the fact is, yeah, this is kind of a progressive thing. And a lot of the students involved, of course, are themselves Palestinians. And so that for them, it's an ethnic issue of a certain type and an issue of where their families are and that kind of thing. But at the same time, it's critical to emphasize that these people are not advocating violence against anybody. They don't cross that line. They've never been accused of crossing that line. And yet they're being denied the right even to talk about this issue because it apparently makes someone uncomfortable. I mean, I can see Thomas Jefferson kind of rolling over in his grave at the present time.
Yeah, I think, some of us thought that was what college was about, was seeing if you could get proven wrong about all the things you think you know, right? No?
Once upon a time, it was, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you and I have had the same experience. You had professors who, struck you as nutcases and things like that. But they had a right to express their views, and if they could be credible in terms of where they were coming from, then you say, okay. I understand that. I accept that. But this is a clear effort to shut down the voices that are talking about Israel. And as I say, it's being funded by billionaires who are throwing a lot of resources into it. And it's a national thing. It's happening on every campus where the issue raises its head, as it were. And then, of course, you have the issue of professors being fired or denied tenure. If they are at all open about this issue, Norman Finkelstein was denied tenure at DePaul University in Chicago, and more recently Stephen Salata, the University of Illinois, actually had a teaching position that he had been offered and was about to step into, and the position was pulled literally out from under his feet. So it's and then how many other professors are quiet on this issue so as not to get in trouble? So it's kind of a censorship sometimes that operates underneath the screen.
Yeah. Well, it's really too bad. And I think, unfortunately, the modern, completely over-the-top PC culture that demands that everyone has a right to have their feelings protected from anyone who would, call them a name or say something that hurts their feelings or whatever is all caught up in this too, where, I mean, I don't know how old you're supposed to be before you're considered an adult now, maybe 35 or 40 or something, but.
82, I think.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Once you're old enough for Social Security and then your life expectancy is another few years, four or five years after that, right?
All right, exactly.
Hold it right there. We'll be right back with Phil Giraldi. We're going to talk more about the nuts and bolts of who's behind all this, the effort to shut down criticism of Israel and the BDS movement on American campuses right after this. Check them out at UNS.com. Israel takes on the First Amendment. UNS.com. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, talking with Phil Giraldi about the Israel lobby trying to shut down the BDS movement and free speech about Israel on America's campuses, especially in the University of California system. And so where exactly are they at on this? They already passed it, or they're about to pass it, or there's still a big fight over whether they're going to pass it, or what is the deal in California? And then if you could please also get into the role of Richard Blum and his front man in the U.S. Senate, Dianne Feinstein.
Right. Yeah, well, as I understand it right now, Janet Napolitano, who is the head of the university system in California, is for the fourth time considering new language on what to do about this. It's basically they're framing it in terms of it's a statement of university policy on intolerance. See, so that's kind of you put it in those terms and you already have it in a box. And so it's on intolerance, and she's been under considerable pressure in all the previous versions of what the statement will be to conform with the Israeli view of the matter, which is that criticism of Israel is by its very nature anti-Semitic. She's under considerable pressure. In particular, from one Richard Blum. Now, most people, that name probably doesn't ring a bell, but he's on the California University of California's Board of Regents, and he has demanded that any student who criticizes Israel be suspended or expelled from the university because they're anti-Semitic bigots who are exhibiting intolerance. So, you know, that's the position he comes from. And he is not only a multi-millionaire, he is the husband of California Senator Dianne Feinstein. And Feinstein has suggested that if these universities don't toe the line on this issue, the U.S. government will be looking into them because they are recipients of federal funds. So, you know, you're opening the door to the U.S. government interfering with universities and interfering with universities on the basis of what students are saying, not what they're doing, what they're saying. And so, you know, if you can figure that one out, I'll give you a medal. But, I mean, it's just it seems to me that this whole thing is so illogical that Americans would be rising up and saying, why is this happening? But we've seen this kind of thing happen far too often.
Yeah. Well, and especially the unlimited arrogance where he says, and you better do what I say because or else, you know, I'm married to a senator and I can have your ass. Like, wow, that's pretty kind of blatant sort of thing. You're supposed to say that in private, not in front of everybody at the meeting of the whatever the hell it was, you know?
Yeah, Board of Regents, but, yeah.
No, and he's not exactly. Just a multimillionaire. He's an arms dealer or you know, mini Halliburton contractor type for the Army is where he made all his money reaching into the Defense Department budget.
And, of course, he had inside access to those funds from his wife. You know, but, again, this is like an issue like Dennis Hastert that nobody wants to talk about it. You know, our Congress is so corrupt. It's the source of all these problems. It's the fact that people at the top of our system can get away with this kind of corruption, say whatever they want, do whatever they want, and that empowers all these other clowns that come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. All right. Well, hell. So what's the problem with the Israelis anyway? I guess I kind of made a little bit of a reference to the occupation there earlier. But this BDS movement is a big deal. And there's a reason that, you know, as you're saying before, there are a lot of Jews who support it. And it's because of what's really going on over there. And right now, things seem to really be escalating. They have a term for it. I forget. But it's this kind of intifada of the knives going on over there, and it's not led by apparently any political or religious or any other group or militia or anything. It's just individual Palestinians attempting to fight back against soldiers and civilians in the occupied territories and in Israel. And then, you know, obviously the Israeli reaction, or, you know, I don't mean to, I guess you could obviously switch around who started what. But that's more or less the shape of things going on. But could you explain what it means to the people?
Well, it seems to be a spontaneous, as you pointed out, a spontaneous uprising. It's just complete frustration at an occupation now that's gone on for 50 years on the West Bank, the Palestinians are fed up, and their political leadership is bankrupt. Is incapable of moving forward, largely because the United States has been playing its phony mediating role in this. If the United States had actually been even-handed probably 30 years ago, we would see a whole different story. But they've perpetuated the cycle of violence by basically permitting the Israelis to continue the occupation. And there was an earlier point when it could have basically ended. And so we have that problem. And now the United States kind of looks the other way when Netanyahu says, no, I have no intention of ever making peace with the Palestinians. They can't have a state. If someone throws a rock, we'll shoot them. And now, of course, the latest comment from Netanyahu that actually it was Palestinians who incited Hitler to carry out the Holocaust. And he gets away with all this stuff. You know, I mean, yeah, people are screaming about it, but where is the U.S. government response to all this kind of thing? I mean, it's pretty feeble.
Yeah. Well, you know, his latest thing where he says Israel will forever live by the sword. Yeah. Isn't there another half of that saying? This is the guy in charge over there?
He probably didn't read that other part.
Oh, man.
It's just crazy. I mean, it's like it's this situation where unfortunately the United States has been kind of a patsy in the whole thing, and has always deferred to Israel on anything important. And now, you know, you're reaping the harvest. The harvest is essentially that you created an intractable situation, and it's only going to be getting more violent. They might be able to shoot a lot of Palestinians, and the thing will calm down for a while, but it's not going to go away. And the Palestinians, for their part, you know, it's deplorable that they're killing civilians. I don't know that they think they have any other options anymore. And, but it's the whole thing is terrible.
Yeah. Hey, listen, everybody, you don't have to endorse it to understand it.
Right.
It's just, you know, not just a military occupation, but a colonization by civilians at the very same time. Hey, you know, Phil, I don't know if you saw this one. I think we're running it today at antiwar.com. From the 972 mag, Yitzhak Rabin never supported Palestinian statehood. That's just kind of the mythology because he was killed by a Likudnik, but all he ever wanted to do really was basically the deal they have now, where they hire this bogus Palestinian authority to be their trustees and enforce their martial law mostly for them. And so then there's kind of this pseudo autonomy. So, and slow and steady encroachment of the settlements, et cetera. So that they get to steal it in slow motion while pretending that they're somehow on their way to some kind of pseudo independence that they're never going to grant.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, he's no different than Netanyahu, Yitzhak Rabin.
Well, he had more style to him. It's like the myth that Yasser Arafat turned down an independent state. He turned down a rump governing situation in which all the controls would have been in the hands of the Israelis. Look, when you control the media, you control the narrative, you can make the narrative whatever you want it to say. Today's Washington Post, I opened it up to the opinion letters page, and there were like six letters, you know, defending Israel. And I was thinking, oh my God, you know, you're printing six letters on this subject.
Although,
isn't that a little bit of overkill?
I mean, on that one though, it's because over the weekend they ran two really good ones by anti-Zionist American liberal Jews saying, this is why we've given up on Israel. This is why we support the boycott, which I was absolutely floored that they ran two like that in the Washington Post. So, I can kind of understand why they're going to turn around. We are talking about Fred Hyatt's editorial page here, right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. And the letters were indeed in response to the op-eds.
Yeah.
And the op-eds were very sensible. I'm sure you read them. We were a bit surprised.
That's why I was so shocked, because they were completely sensible. Yeah. What were they doing in the Washington Post in the first place? He must have been on vacation or something.
Hyatt might have had a head blip or something like that.
Yeah, but no, I mean, clearly you're right that the Palestinian side of the story is only just barely breaking through, and that's why the backlash. But anyway, is that the music already playing thing? All right, hey, Phil, thanks very much for doing the show again. Really appreciate it, as always.
All right, take care.
See ya. We'll be right back, y'all. Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. Hey, Al Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Okay, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Libertarian foreign policy stuff mostly here. Cool, a new Ramsey Rude column just landed. Okay, listen, the Islamic State war, such as it is, whatever it is. Okay, so big news broke the other day. The Iraqis have authorized Russia to attack ISIS targets. Now, that presumes the illegitimacy of the Islamic State, which, okay, fine by me, I think all of them are. But it assumes the sovereignty of Baghdad, Shiistan's government, over Mosul, Ramadi, Fallujah, which is a stretch, but whatever. So, in other words, Iraqi Shiistan has asked Russia, their natural allies, to help them fight the Islamic State. Well, so the Americans flipped out and said, nah, that never happened. And by the way, the Iraqis told us to tell you that they don't like you and they don't want to be your friend anymore, too. And in fact, watch this. The defense secretary said, we are going to expand direct action on the ground in Iraq and Syria. The embedding, of course, of American Rangers, I guess, and Delta and whatever, first and second tier special forces, with the what's left of the Iraqi army, the Shiistan Iraqi army. And so, there you go. We're going to keep the Russians out that way. Then the Iraqis responded. The spokesman for the sock puppet, Abadi, said, we didn't ask for U.S. ground operations. We don't want your help. Oh, we do want your weapons and training. But we don't want your help, and we didn't agree to this. You see what's going on here. The government in Baghdad is not an ally of the United States of America. If anything, the Islamic State is. At least we're there. Our government is their ally, even if they're not our ally back. Loose use of these we's and ours and them's, but you know what the hell I'm trying to say. When I can try to say it. And so, there you go. The Shiite Crescent in alliance with Iran. And the Al-Qaeda Crescent. in alliance with the United States. Iran and Russia, I guess I should say. And the Al-Qaeda alliance with Saudi and America and Turkey and Israel. There you go. Saudi clerics urge jihad against Syria, Iran, and Russia. Notably leave America, Turkey, Israel off the list. And then, yeah, so, sorry. My delivery on this point has not been, you know, perfection. But you understand what I'm trying to say. America put a government in power in Baghdad, fought a 5-year war, killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, got more than 1 million killed. Torture and the whole goddamn mess of Iraq War II, all to put a government in power in Baghdad that immediately turned around and said, now get out. Thanks a lot, but we're the supermajority and we're in alliance with Iran next door. We don't need you. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. That's why it was George W. Bush, not Barack Obama, that signed the agreement to leave by the end of 2011. Thanks a lot. Now beat it. And so they put themselves in this position. And then, so where does that leave us? Without Iraqi Shiistan, they go over to Iran and Russia and Hezbollah and Damascus. I can't say Syria because there's, I don't know, Assadistan. Syrian Shiistan. Where does that leave us? That leaves us in alliance with Al-Qaeda. And here's the thing about this. You'll like this, I think. It's by Thomas Jocelyn at the Long War Journal. Why, they're no peaceniks. They're no anti-interventionists. They're some kind of Republican national security state types, right? The Long War Journal. You know what? I admit I should read them all the time. To know everything they think they know. But I don't, because I'm negligent. But I'm buying this, man. I think you'll like it, too. A rare interview with an experienced Al-Qaeda commander shows how the group is using the Islamic State to make itself look, quote, moderate. It's just like we were joking on the show about how, oh my God, ISIS broke off from Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda wasn't murderous enough for them. They're so psycho. That talking point, which is only pseudo, sort of, kind of true, but out of context, it's a tactical decision, not just a matter of simple bloodthirst. But anyway, well, maybe a strategic one. But anyway, they turn that split. My God, ISIS are even more bloodthirsty than Al-Qaeda. They turn that right around on you, too. Al-Qaeda is very moderate compared to ISIS. How simple is that? Oh, yes, in fact, they are sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher in New York City. But, you know, other than that. Oh, yeah, they're veterans of the Iraq War II, where America fought for Iranian-backed Shiistan against the Sunnis and Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But, hey. And then, so what it is it's this guy, he's an Australian. Usama Hamza Australi, originally from Queensland. And he says he's been a member of Al-Qaeda for 14 years, since mid-2001. He's currently in Syria representing Al-Qaeda, working with the al-Nusra Front. And they go on here. He goes on to explain. I love this. It's just like the communists and the Hegelian dialectic and all this crap, right? He says, one of the greatest things about the Islamic State is before people saw Al-Qaeda and the Mujahideen in general as the extremists and those that abstain from jihad as the normal, moderate Muslims following the middle way, he explains. But now the truth has come out. This is an Al-Qaeda guy talking. The Mujahideen are, in fact, the correct and moderate path, and the ISIS are the extremists. You see how they do you? Australia concludes. So I think that ISIS is a blessing in disguise for the Muslim Ummah. Now, he's talking mostly about impressing Muslims in the Middle East, Arab Muslims in particular, Sunnis. But you see how what a perfect PR game this is for the Americans, too. And fully announced beforehand. I mean, we're months and months into an official announcement of the goal of somehow rehabilitating Al-Qaeda in the American and Western mind enough that we can go ahead and keep backing them against the Assad regime. And what was funny is actually what they did was Al Jazeera did a 45-minute interview of Al-Ghulani, the leader of Al-Qaeda in Syria, and the goal was he was supposed to distance himself from Zawahiri, and he did no such thing. And so that was supposed to be, well, that's kind of kaput. Because at least we were going to have as a talking point that he's renounced Zawahiri, or at least distanced himself. But nope. Still sworn to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. And, but anyway. Hey, if David Petraeus can come out and openly call for backing the al-Nusra Front, then you know it's already going on in a very direct way. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to my show. It's the Scott Horton Show. So, man, I guess you guys all saw the cop that beat up the girl in class the other day, flipped her over, body slam style, still in her desk. Inventive. Yeah, kind of nice maneuver there, dude. Well, at least he got fired today. Of course, he won't be prosecuted, but out of a job, that's interesting. Or actually, I think maybe he just got put on suspended leave kind of thing. We'll see what happens. 2 weeks vacation, maybe? The sheriff seemed to recognize that this is a PR disaster. So, something must be done. Never mind, it's a crime. Or anything like that. I didn't see whether they're still going to go ahead with prosecuting the girl or not. And I don't know if anybody's even reporting. Well, what are her injuries? Seems like he body slammed her really good. And then, anyway, I'm looking at Twitter, and then here comes kid with cerebral palsy in a wheelchair being wheeled down the hallway. Jeez, I guess he must have said something, because then the cop wheeling, oh, did I mention government school hallway? And the cop just starts beating the crap out of him from behind. Just sucker punches him. Blam, right hook to the right side of, you know, the back of his head. Blam. You can look at it on my Twitter feed right now. It's amazing to the point of amusing to me that, not the video, but that people keep putting their kids in government school, that they can't figure out what it is that's going on here. It's the lack of accountability. I mean, you look at the typical liberal, maybe American view, but especially everybody to the left, they think that the purpose of schools is to give teachers jobs. What? It's not even about the customers in the first place. The whole thing is about the supply side. I mean, that's just from in the first place. But the whole thing is run by government, which means that they're all in on it together against you. Don't you know? And they're going to protect each other and never hold each other accountable. It's the thin blue line. Without them, society would destroy itself. So they have to allow each other to break the law all the time. They use as their excuse. They conjure and would have you believe. But anyway, back to the fascination part. People keep putting their kids in government school. And I know you have to work, but man, you can't work something out. Stay up late. Teach them at night. Earn them a damn certificate. I know that there are qualifications. You still have to jump through government hoops to get official diplomas and whatever doing homeschool. But still, you can do it. You can do it. And I know people who are not ideological at all. People who are not political, who don't think in political terms about anything. They just yank their kids out of government school because they suck. My kid came home from school not knowing what the hell is going on, so I decided this is ridiculous. I'm just sending them there to play all day or to be babysat? Or I want them to actually learn something so that they're an adult by the time they're done growing up, you know? What the hell's going on here anyway? But people, they just, you know what I really should do? For 8 hours a day, I should send my kid to the tender mercies, basically of cops. I should have people who are more or less deputies of the police state in charge of teaching my kid reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that's actually probably an exaggeration. We know they sure as hell aren't shown a globe for a minute, a single time, K through 12. We know they don't know anything about history, including what century it is or why or anything. Are you on a spaceship with the rest of us? Who knows? Nobody ever explained anything to them at all, apparently. But anyway, and they can beat the crap out of your kid. In the case of this guy who body slammed this kid, he very well could have broken her neck. The way he body slammed this little girl. For what? For chewing bubblegum? For defying his authority. That's a death sentence. She's lucky he didn't deliberately go ahead and break her neck. You know, like grab it and twist until it can't be twisted no more kind of thing. And then he'd still probably have about the same punishment he has right now. And you know, the girl that filmed it, they arrested her too. She refused to give up the camera to the cop because he was the phone. He was going to delete it. He can obstruct justice all he wants. You understand? Again, he works for the government. He can break any law. Destroy whatever evidence. There is no law when it comes to the people in charge of enforcing it. So anyway, but she refused to do it. And I guess he wasn't brave enough to go ahead and body slam her in order to, but he did arrest her. And she was charged. She was charged with disrupting school. I mean, you've got to be insane to think. And I know that, like, hey, man, in the history of civil rights, there's a giant battle for, like, hey, let the poor black kids into the government schools with the white kids so they can learn, too. It's not fair. But you know what? I think everybody should have learned the lesson better there that, you know what? We'll just make our own damn schools. Who needs your crappy textbooks full of lies and your paramilitary English teachers? How about you guys all go and screw yourselves and jump in a lake and stay at the bottom until you're done and we'll just be free and take care of ourselves? Whoever sold the idea, it must have been government school that told you that the government is you when the government clearly is not you. If it was, you wouldn't call it the government. You'd call it me. Right? Okay. Pretty simple. It's a lie, but they say it a lot of times, so. Seems like maybe it's true. Yeah, no, it's not. And you'd be crazy. You'd have to be crazy to turn your kids over to these goons at this point. That's what I think. Now look at this kid getting pushed down the hallway in a wheelchair and just getting blammed by this cop. And what do you think happened to him? Anyway, you know what? I did go to government schools, and I went to pretty damn good ones in Northwest Austin. As far as government schools go, I am not particularly complaining about my experience, although, yeah, it did suck, of course. But there are a lot worse. And in fact, from what I've heard, the school district where I went to school when I was a kid, it's way worse. Everything is dumbed down by at least 2 full grade levels now compared to where it was 25 years ago. Oh no, you're shocked, right, when I say that.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host 2 shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
I love that one.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right, I haven't even read this yet, but sounds interesting. It's written by our friend Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Growing White House rift over Saudi Arabia's huge civilian toll bombing Yemen. White House walking on eggshells, quote unquote, with public comments on tolls. Sources within the Obama administration are reportedly increasingly at odds over the Saudi war in Yemen, which the U.S. has been participating in, and particularly the huge civilian toll of Saudi airstrikes, with official estimates of about 1,500 civilians killed in Saudi airstrikes alone in the war. God, really? Is that all? You gotta be kidding me. But while those familiar with internal conversations say that, I'm not saying that's okay. I'm not. That's like saying Al-Qaeda's moderate compared to ISIS. I'm just saying I would have thought it would be way worse by now. And that is, he says, just still official estimates. Who knows? I don't know. But while those familiar with internal conversations say the White House has been increasingly frustrated, and has even privately complained about the toll to the Saudis, they also see the U.S., quote, walking on eggshells with public comments about the war, that even some officials are starting to see it as a de facto support for Saudi war crimes. Of course it is. Oh, which, sorry for editorializing there. Jason continues, which, as a practical matter, it is, since the U.S. has been refueling those Saudi warplanes for their airstrikes and has also at times participated in the naval blockade that has brought much of Yemen to the brink of famine. Still, it is unclear when officials signed on for the Saudi war. They didn't anticipate this, which may be the biggest problem and why so many are up in arms. The U.S. sees placating the Saudis as so desperately important right now that they feel as though they don't dare criticize the enormous civilian toll of the war, a goal which really picked up amid trying to sell the P5+1 nuclear deal with Iran. The U.S. has been openly trying to pay off opponents of the deal, chiefly Israel, to the tune of several billion dollars to acquiesce on the pact. But in the case of the Saudis, it seems this is boiling down to the U.S. looking the other way every time a wedding party is bombed or an airport destroyed. And of course, how's America supposed to complain? And they can stop participating in it. But for the Americans to say stop attacking hospitals and weddings is kind of, well, you know, I mean, if we were in your position, that is what we would do too, but please don't, because when you do it, it makes us look bad. I don't know. What's the argument? They're just Arabs, right? Our government can murder as many of them as they feel like. something. And yeah, I mean, the fact that this is the American policy, to go along with this when there's no American interest in bombing the Houthis whatsoever. I mean, they haven't even crossed us, much less actually threatened us or anything like that. You know, the whole thing is crazy. And as Jonathan Marshall put it, I forget, this may have been during the commercial break yesterday. You may or may not have heard it, live audience types. But we were talking about how, man, the nuclear deal secures Saudi Arabia and Israel and double extra guarantees that Iran's nuclear program remains civilian. So the entire premise, the entire construct that America has to now give big sops to our allies as we beg humble forgiveness from them for going through all of this crap just to protect their interests, is all wrongheaded. And look at where it's led us. Appeasing Israel and Saudi in Syria has gotten hundreds of thousands of people killed. Appeasing them in Yemen, at least tens of thousands. And, you know, all reports are, I don't know how the hell this works, guys. Can anybody help me understand how a population can be on the brink of starvation for 6 months, 7 months? They're going hungry as hell, that's for sure. I don't know how many have died. You know, it doesn't count if it's not an airstrike, right? How many people are just laying down dying because gasoline is unavailable? Travel, distribution of medicine, food, water, basic resources. You know, market capitalism such as it exists in Yemen is off while the bombs are falling. Prices go up because of the difficulty in getting things done. It's a freaking war zone in the poorest country in the Middle East that is the most dependent on foreign imports of any country in the Middle East. We got them under full blockade and bombing. So nice to see that they held a meeting and decided to leak that at least some of us are concerned. Yes, we're quite concerned. You know what we should do? We should put a thing in Politico saying that we're concerned that we're bombing Yemen. They go on and on crying all day about the Russians bombing in Syria, which I'm against too. But again, any criticism by the U.S. of any country for bombing anybody is completely hollow at this point. And you know, Jonathan Marshall was saying, you know, the Americans are under pressure because the Saudis have made it clear that they're going to keep doing the war anyway, whether the Americans help them or not. And I say, let's try it. Let's call their bluff and say, no more American support. No more maintenance on your planes. No more equipping your bombs. No more coordinates. No more mid-air refueling. No more protection from the rest of world opinion in the so-called institutions. We are done with the Yemen war. If you're going to do it, it's on you. And hell, why not go ahead and call it an aggressive war, which is what it is. Quite in violation of international law. How's this any different than the war in Libya? We don't pretend that wasn't an American war just because the British and the French flew most of the planes on American dollars and American weapons, American coordination. It's the same thing. You know, I mean, Obama's been bombing Al-Qaeda targets, at least supposed ones, in Yemen for years now with the drone war and the air war. But this is totally different. This is now taking their side and fighting basically a full-scale air campaign against the now, you know, the current government of Yemen in the capital city. Bombing the crap out of them. Again, Matthew Aid snuck into the country, took a dinghy over from Djibouti, crossed the Red Sea, snuck into northern Yemen, and reported a wasteland. There's a headline not long ago that said, Yemen after 5 months looks like Syria after 5 years of bombardment, of bombing. Total devastation. And then, yeah, you wonder where all the refugees are coming from. Your government is bombing all these people. Where are they not bombing people? And by the way, I ain't trying to, hop on some bandwagon about demonizing the migrants, many of whom are legitimate refugees. But I have to suspect, only because it's my confirmation bias repeating itself. I've been predicting for years that American and Western support for Al-Qaeda in Syria is going to blow back hard before and after ISIS ever split off from Nusra and whatever. That you got thousands of these guys in a way that never really happened. It wasn't quite this phenomenon, young men coming from the West to fight for Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But boy, are they ready to come for this one. And they're going to blow back into Europe. And don't you think that the Islamic State and Nusra are sending their guys in as sleepers? I do. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you could hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples, and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there. Hey, man, how's it going? I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right, so a little bit of Eastern Europe talk here. As far as I know, the ceasefire in Eastern Ukraine is more or less holding. Although I still see things about, there's some fighting, people killed here and there. This one, Ukraine Today, I don't know if it's lying or not. Ceasefire shattered. All the other reports say everything's fine. I don't know what the hell. This is a pro-Ukrainian, pro-Kiev paper here. Violence continues. Could be. I don't know. It's been like this. Minsk 2, the current peace deal that they're under now, has been in effect for, I forget how long, quite a few months, and there's remained skirmishes. Although official policy at the top of both sides is that they're, you know, at ceasefire at least. I mean, even when it's a little hollow, it's better than outright re-engagement. I'll take hypocrisy if it's keep it lowest level possible. So that's the good news, is the ceasefire is more or less holding there. They held local elections across Ukraine, and in Mariupol, which is on the coast, and I believe is not, you know, outright occupied by, or, you know, controlled by rebel forces, at least not yet, so-called rebels, I don't know, whatever, the Donetsk and the Luhansk separatists, or, you know, what do you call them, autonomists, anyway. But apparently their guys were winning. The pro-Donetsk and Luhansk types were winning. And so they called off the elections on Sunday. And, they blamed, whatever supposedly pro-Russian opposition party for supposedly ruining it. Yeah, they were going to win. So they canceled the election. So hopefully that they can figure out a way to work this out, although this is the way you're supposed to work it out, right? Democracy is stupid and horrible, but it's better than war all the time. So you win some, you lose some, you opposing factions take power in different places within one polity, and they're going to have to compromise, guys, and figure it out. Canceling the elections is a good way to ruin everything and go back to full conflict. Then again, the government in Kiev is under a lot of pressure from their Nazi allies to do no compromising with the more Russian, historically Russian factions in the east of the country. And, you know, this guy, Andriy Poruby, however you pronounce his damn name, Poruby, he is right sector's parliamentarian. He's the head of the right sector Nazi party. Well, more like, you know, SA street militia. But he's a member of parliament. And he's threatened Poroshenko, the sock puppet president, and I guess, I don't know if he's directly threatened Yatsenyuk or not. I don't know, maybe they get along well enough. But he has threatened that, hey, I overthrew the government last time to put you guys in here. You think I can't overthrow you? I can. And they haven't really tried it yet, but they've had massive protests. And of course, you know, they're in real trouble there. And as there's this article in foreignpolicy.com pointed out, winter's coming. It's already, you know, started. And it's in wintertime in Ukraine where traditionally politicians are shown to be full of hot air themselves, but to have none to share with anybody else. You like my little metaphor there? So, yeah, people are going to be really cold and really poor and cold and angry. And so it's Nazi recruitment season in Western Ukraine, where Barack Obama's Hitler-loving Nazi allies are threatening to get too big for their britches and overthrow the government that America's put in power there, that they helped America put in power there. And so, boy, I guess we'll see what happens. What do you think the Easterners are going to do if the Western, you know, sock puppet technocrats are overthrown by actual Hitler-loving Nazis? Think Minsk II is going to hold then? You think Kiev is going to stick to their agreement at that point? You know, these politicians, our politicians, they think they're really something and everything, but you see the dangerous game they're playing. You know, anytime I say Ukraine, you just think Russia's Canada. Whatever I'm describing the U.S. government doing to Ukraine, doing in Ukraine, you just think for a minute, what if the Russians were doing that in Canada, overthrowing Canada's parliament and installing a Nazi, you know, using a bunch of Nazis to do it, you know, SA-style street thugs, to seize all the buildings and run the democracy out of town, seize power. I know, that'd be crazy, right? Holy, that's what America's doing in all the way Eastern Europe as you can get without being in Russia. And, yeah, this is a hell of a thing, man. They are playing with thermonuclear fire, really. And I'm not trying to be too much of an alarmist, because I think, man, wouldn't it be stupid and improbable for there to be a real war between America and Russia over something as stupid as Ukraine or Syria or, you know, these conflicts of interest, supposed ones, ginned up ones by our side mostly. But then again, we've almost had full-scale nuclear war with Russia a lot of times over misunderstandings and misinterpretations. You ever see the movie, I told you yesterday about this thing in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists about you know, Okinawa and how they almost nuked Russia on bad orders back during the Cuban Missile Crisis. But if you've ever seen the movie 13 Days, and this somewhat corresponds to actual history, I believe, they talk about how everything they do is diplomatic language. Well, we're calling it a quarantine, not a blockade. And we're going to fire across their bow, but not too close and whatever. This is all language. Language. And we just have to hope that they're going to interpret these cannons going off correctly. And a lot of times that kind of crap fails, can fail. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was told, yes, it's the Cold War and Ronald Reagan and the commies were all at a standoff. And yeah, both sides have nuclear bombs and all this kind of thing. But neither side really wants war. Even the, well, which isn't really true. Neither of the leaders want war. Yeah, there are people in the Pentagon who are willing to have a nuclear war with Russia anytime. I don't know about in the 80s, certainly in previous eras. But, everybody knows better, but that doesn't make it impossible. And you think about it just from a scientific point of view, there are thousands of these things in the world right now. And it isn't just America and its allies, you know. India and Pakistan and China, there's a very volatile border region full of nuclear bombs. And then, of course, Russia and America still have thousands. The Israelis, are, you might have noticed their government is run by some madmen who have threatened to even bomb all the Western capitals if we ever let them down. No, really. Google it up, man. The Samson option. You couldn't make this stuff up about the Israelis, man. And then, of course, you know, the French and the British got them. And once nukes start going off, then people start making all hasty decisions. Yeah, I saw where Roger Waters was, you know, thinking about, daydreaming about Hillary Clinton, talking about Hillary Clinton dropping the bomb. Can you see her deciding, this is my legacy? Right? Like, was it Stephen King? The Dead Zone? He's like, this is my destiny, to nuke the world. I could see her doing that, couldn't you? All right. Thanks, guys. See you tomorrow.